Ainsley, Brian, and I got back on Tuesday afternoon, and even before we got back, I was getting messages from people just talking about how well Pastor Steve did and how well Pastor Nick did, and I so appreciate the strong staff we have when I'm away. However, every now and then I need to do some correction, and I just thought I'd take a moment just to bring a little bit of correction from last week. I did not text Pastor Nick to ask him to clean my car. I just don't want you to think that I would do such a thing. He has misled you, and I'm praying for repentance to take place in his life. And so, got that cleared up. Now, just go sit down. Man, it seems like forever since I've preached. I haven't preached a regular message since before Easter, and I'm just looking forward to today, this series, Soul Detox. I don't know if you've ever experienced envy before, but envy hit me at a very young age. I'm the oldest of all the family members on both sides of my family, both my mom's side and my dad's side. I'm the oldest cousin. And you know, being the oldest individual, if anybody in this place is the oldest individual, you know that you seem to be the center of attention, that you always do the first. You're the first to go to public school. You're the first to walk. You're the first to graduate public school, go to high school, first to get your driver's license, first to get married, first to have kids, all those things, all the first. And so there's this attention on you, and I was used to it, and I was like 5 years old, and everybody would, you know, always compliment me for my successes, and I'm fishing with my dad and my uncle and my cousin Stephen, who's a year younger than me. And as we're fishing, my cousin Stephen, he just keeps getting nibbles on his hook. And just like he's bringing up a couple fish, and I'm getting frustrated because everybody in the boat is complimenting my cousin. And envy starts to creep in my heart. Even at the age of 5, I am not happy that my 4-year-old cousin is having success fishing. I mean, this is probably the shaping of his life. It will set his course of destiny, but I am not happy for him because he is getting the attention that I feel I deserve. And so I keep trying different hooks, and I'm complaining to my dad that he needs to give me better worms and better lures and just trying different things. And I come to this place where I feel that the reason why he's fishing better is because he's on the better side of the boat. You know, I know if you're a fisherman, you understand that doesn't even make sense. But I am convinced that he is succeeding because he's on the better side of the boat. And so he's got an advantage, of course. Like, I'm 5 years old, and I actually should have better skill set in this whole thing, and I should be catching. But the only explanation is that he's on the better side of the boat. And so Stephen needs to go to the washroom, which is a joyous moment for me, because I now know that if we can pull into shore, and as he goes up onto the little island to find a private spot with my Uncle David, that I could casually shift over to his side of the boat, the good side of the boat where there's lots of good fishing. And so Stephen, we pull the boat into this island, and my Uncle David takes Stephen up into this forested area on this little island in the middle of this lake. And I just like, hey, Dad, I feel like this is not a good spot. I'm gonna sit over here, and I shift over to the spot that is prime for fishing. My cousin comes back. He's 4 years old. He doesn't have a clue what's going on. He doesn't think. He doesn't comprehend. I mean, my Uncle David doesn't think what's going on. I mean, he could not process that there would be such evil envy in my heart. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. And so he gets in and just thinks that I've shifted spots. And so we begin to go out into the water and start fishing again. And sure enough, I start catching fish. I mean, you may think it's illogical that there's a good side of the boat, but I'm telling you, that day I got the good side of the boat. And all of a sudden, people are singing my praises, and they're talking about what a great fisherman. Now the world has gone back to normal. Like, things are fine. And I'm fishing, and I end the day with the most amount of fish because, I deserve the accolades. I deserve to have the most fish. And I go home. And my dad starts to tell my mom about how I was struggling to fish, and I caught more fish than Stephen, which is, this competitive nature inside of me. It's always the goal to be better than somebody else. And I'm hearing everything that I thought I deserved. But in the depths of my gut at the age of 5, it was like I had achieved something that I didn't deserve. That I had been chasing after something that I so desperately wanted. And now that I had it, I felt like I didn't deserve it because I knew how I had got there. Even though it doesn't make any sense that a side of the boat would would be the better side. It was what I did, my motivation, pursuing something out of envy that brought me to the place of getting what I wanted. And even at the age of 5, I knew that there was this monster inside of me, this monster of envy. I don't know if you've ever experienced envy, but if you look up at the screen, we have a couple dictionary definitions. The first is from Vine's dictionary. It says, envy is the feeling of displeasure produced by witnessing or hearing of the advantage of prosperity of others. You ever hear somebody at work tell you about the promotion? And you smile and go, oh, that's awesome. And in your mind, you go, you don't deserve that. Someone drives up onto your street and you're going, if you've seen my car and my Tribute, there's rust all over it. And someone pulls up in a nice car and they're like, oh, you see my new car? Oh, that's awesome. Congratulations, you dirty, rotten scoundrel. You know, you're just, it's not displeasure. Next definition. Envy is the painful or resentful awareness of an advantage enjoyed by another, joined with a desire to possess the same advantage. It's when someone gets something that you are completely upset about, but not only are you disturbed inside, not only does your emotion start to go negative, but there's something inside of you that goes, I need that. I need that. Now, I'm not going to ask for you to raise your hands and say how many of you have been there, but I know that every single one of us have had moments where we have envied somebody. That individual gets a promotion at work. We want that. That person gets a new house that's nicer than ours. We want that. You go on Facebook and someone's vacationing in an exotic location. I want that. I deserve that. Someone's spouse is giving them more attention. You go, I want that. Or maybe even spiritually. You come to prayer and I say, hey, does anybody want to share? And the same person just keeps testifying that God's answering prayer after prayer after prayer. And you've been praying like crazy and fasting and doing everything and no answers. And you're ticked off that God's answering. You want God to stop. It's this thing inside of us that has displeasure. It's this monster inside of us that has displeasure when someone gains an advantage. And not only is there displeasure, but we actually desire what they have. This monster, Shakespeare, in the story Othello, he gave us this quote. So just look up at the screen. It says, beware, my lord, of jealousy. It is the green-eyed monster which doth mock the meat it feeds on. This is where we get green with envy from. This green-eyed monster that mocks the meat, me. This monster that's inside of me that is mocking me because it is feeding on me. It is eating me. It is causing me to do things I don't want to do and have an attitude that I don't want to have. And it's causing me to be less like Christ than I should be. This green with envy monster inside of me. And I don't know about you, but there are moments, if I could be really honest, in my life where I envy. I envy people for what they have. I envy people for the things they've achieved. I envy people for just things that I wish that I had. We each have it. But what do we do? What do we do with it? Look at James chapter 3, verse 14 to 16. It says, but if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. Very interesting. It doesn't just say that it's a bad thing. It actually says it's demonic. It's from the devil, this idea of envy. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. What's interesting is that when envy creeps up in our hearts, James says that we will actually have every kind of evil formulate out of our lives. We would never begin to pursue certain sins just because. But when there's envy, when we start to have uncomfortable feelings about what somebody else has, we become materialistic. We covet, we lust, we gossip, we criticize. Every type of evil will be found when there's envy in our hearts. It's a monster that eats away at our soul. And so what do we do when envy creeps up in our lives? Really quick, three things. First of all, we need to celebrate instead of comparing. Celebrate instead of comparing. Romans chapter 1, verse 21 and 29 says this. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him. This is very important. Just pause here for a second. says there's people who once knew God, but they didn't glorify him, nor did they thank him. They never celebrated what God gave them. And so what happens, we continue to read, but their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. They have become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and depravity. And then it ends, it says, they are full of envy. Paul's saying to the Romans that when there's a lack of thanksgiving, a lack of celebration of the things that God's given us, we will begin to do our own thing and we will find ourselves pursuing envy. There is a correlation between thanksgiving and envy. Thanksgiving is to celebrate what God's given us. Envy is to be comparing what God has given to somebody else. Thanksgiving is celebrating what he's given us. And when we envy, we think about what God's given them. I love the story in 1 Samuel chapter 18. David has just in the previous chapter taken out Goliath. I mean, you got to picture it. Here's this army of Saul, and Saul's not willing to take on Goliath, and nobody in his army's willing to. His best generals, like, nobody's willing to do it. And this little shepherd boy comes up, probably in his late teens, and he is perturbed inside that this Goliath Philistine is mocking God. And he says, hey, you know what? I'll take him out. And at first, Saul tries to put armor on him. I mean, he's got no other option. Tries to put armor on him, doesn't fit. David goes, hey, I'll just go with my slingshot. Saul's been waiting for somebody. He doesn't know what's going to happen. He actually is thinking this is a bleak situation. David goes out and kills Goliath, and they win over the Philistines. And the very next chapter, Saul does what any good leader would do. He takes this young prospect, this number one draft pick, and he brings him into his kingdom because he needs him nearby. When you find the best of the best, you bring them close to you. And so the Bible tells us in 1 Samuel 18 that Saul brings David in and makes him part of his family. And not only does he got this great military individual on his side now, but David and his son Jonathan have begun to have a great relationship. And so it's almost like a family member. And everything seems to be good. And David goes out and he starts to defend Israel, attack other nations, has great success. And I mean, Saul is winning. This leader of the nation of Israel is winning. And then something happens. And David comes back. And Saul can hear singing in the streets. And he goes to his window and he leans out, listens to the words, what's being articulated with the song. And he hears this song, and I'm not going to sing it because that will cause people to leave the church. But he begins to sing, and he says, the crowd sings, Saul has slain his thousands, but David has slain 10,000s. Thousands, 10,000s. And in the moment when he hears this, there is a comparison trap that occurs in Saul's heart. Envy begins to rise its head because he compares himself with this younger individual. The king compares himself with David because he is not getting as much as David's getting. Oh, they're singing about him, but they're just not singing enough. He's not getting enough. It's like, those of you who have kids will relate to this. It's like when you give your two kids ice cream. You put what you think is the right amount of ice cream into the two bowls. And then all of a sudden, one of them starts to stare at it, looks at the other bowl, looks back, lifts the bowl up, and begins to cry for justice. I don't have as much as Johnny. Johnny has more. And so mom comes over and just puts a little bit more ice cream into this kid's bowl. Now Johnny looks over. Now Johnny's upset and back and forth and back and forth until mom gets smart, brings out the scale, puts both bowls on the scale, measures it, and shows them the number that they have the exact same amount. This is what's going on in Saul's heart. He's envying because he sees that the other guy has more in his bowl, more accolades. I mean, they're singing about him. And there are moments in our heart when we look towards somebody else and we see that they have more. They have more in terms of giftings. They have more in terms of finances. They may have more in terms of what God is doing in that season. They may have more success in a certain area. And we begin to look at them, and their more causes envy to creep up in our heart because we are comparing what we have to what they have. What's interesting is that David Saul never celebrates what he actually has. I mean, the moment's missed. You see, what does he have? Saul's king. There is nobody more important in the kingdom than him. They might be singing about David's victories, but David's not the king. Saul is. Saul's the one that God's chosen, but he doesn't thank God for that. He doesn't thank God that they're gaining victories. I mean, it's a great moment to say, God, through this young man you've brought into my kingdom, we're terrorizing the enemy. He doesn't thank God for that. He doesn't thank God for the provision of having a young warrior. He doesn't thank God for the fact that he doesn't need to go out into battle as much because David's doing it for him. He doesn't even thank God that people are singing about him. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I came to church, it was nice to have a few people say, hey, Pastor, we missed you, but nobody sang about me. You might want, no, I'm just joking. But nobody came in and started singing about me. But if you did, oh, that made me feel so good. Thank you, Jesus, that I get to pastor a church where they sing about me. No, I don't want that to happen. But Saul has people singing about him. I mean, they're singing about his victories, but it's not enough because he has to keep comparing. He misses out on what God has given him. What God's given him. You see, there's so many times where we get into the envy trap, where the envy monster raises its head because all we do is compare. We compare somebody else's spouse. We compare somebody else's job. We compare the materialistic goods that they have. We compare their giftings, their fame, their successes. We see what they have and we miss out. I want to encourage you, the way to kill the monster of envy in your life is to celebrate what God has given you. Like, stop looking over the fence, but begin to think, I thank God for my wife. I thank you for her giftings. I thank God for my kids. I thank God for the great job I have. I thank God for the clothes I have. I thank God for the amount of money I have in my bank account. I thank God for the provisions he's given me. I thank God for all that he's blessed me with. And when we celebrate what God's given, it's hard to look over the fence at somebody else and compare. We were in Cambodia this, obviously, the last couple weeks. On the last day, we went to a place called Sensok. And Tiffany Rooley, who's the CCP Child Care Plus director, wanted to show us this project, which is one of the most significant. And it's the poorest in the Phnom Penh area. I have to tell you that I've never, ever in my life experienced this kind of poverty. We started to enter a neighborhood, and I'm guessing that the neighborhood probably would fit on our property. 2,000 families lived in this neighborhood. Not 2,000 people, 2,000 families. We walk down this dirty laneway. We get to one of the first homes where there's a Child Care Plus kid. And we get to meet the family, and they are full of smiles. And Tiffany says, look inside the house. I look in the house, and the house is probably from here to the edge of the stage, from this step over to about here. That's their house. They have this little loft area that's about this high, where they go when the flooding takes place because the sewage comes into their house. This is a family of five people, mom, dad, and three kids. I couldn't even comprehend how they lived in the place. We walked through streets where there's dirt and garbage everywhere. Kids, I remember one moment, Tiffany pointed out one of the children who's a Child Care Plus, who's a kid with AIDS. And I'm just seeing the dirtiness and watching kids run through the streets and looking in these little homes and seeing so little. And then we get near the end of the project and I see the garbage that's piled up everywhere. And there's these homes where the back of the house, these tin shacks, there's a pipe that goes to the water where the kids swim, and that's where all their sewage goes. Hospital next to this complex that dumps all their waste into this water. These kids play there. I have to tell you that I was overwhelmed. And in my mind, I kept comparing what they had to what I had. I kept thinking they have so little. They need more. And I just kept thinking about what needed to take place. And we talked about it as we got back to the van. I'll never forget Tiffany's words. She said, when I first went to Sensok, I was overwhelmed with what was there. She said, but today, as I look at what you see and probably feeling overwhelmed, She said, I am so thankful because what is greater than what was. She says, if you could only see it 8 years ago, you would be blown away by how much they have. And in my mind, I'm thinking, how can you say that? Because this, if you compare it to what I have in Canada, they have nothing. But all she did is celebrate what God had at least given them from here to here. Here's this little home, and they're able, and she's able to celebrate, and these people are smiling because of what they have, so little that not one person in this place could ever survive on what they had. But they smiled and celebrated what God gave rather than comparing. And friends, I want to tell you, you kill the monster of envy when you celebrate what God's given to you instead of comparing what somebody else has. The second thing that we need to understand is not only do we celebrate instead of comparing, we need to choose contentment over chasing. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 4. It says, and I saw that all toil and all achievement spring from one person's envy of another. This too is meaningless. A chasing after the wind. I don't know about you, but there have been moments in my life where I have toiled and I have worked hard, not because I felt the Spirit of God saying this is what I need to go after, because I chased after what somebody else had. I chased after success. I chased after a promotion. I chased after more in my life because other people had it. And Solomon says that this pursuit, this hard working towards going after what other people have because the monster of envy is rising its head, it's a chasing after the wind. Chasing. When I was a kid, it was a season I was probably junior high age. It was a season when the older teens in our youth group wore cowboy hats. Sad season of history. And there was this one guy who I knew that he didn't like me, and I'd actually heard him make some comments and said I was a pesky little 13-year-old kid. And I so wanted his approval. I so want it to be cool. I so want it to be accepted by the older teens. And I felt like this guy, Steve, that he was the epitome of what I should be after. And so he wore a cool cowboy hat. And I was in awe, and I thought, if I could just have a cowboy hat, I will be cool. I will be accepted. Life will be okay. We didn't have a whole lot of money, and so I didn't really think that we were going to get a chance to get a cowboy hat. And one day we were in a store, and I saw this giant denim cowboy hat. Now, I don't know if you noticed, and please don't say amen or nod your head or even say yes, but I have a big head. People told me this. Thank you for your kindness. Big head. And so it was hard to find a cowboy hat that actually would sit on without being blown off. But this cowboy hat, it sat perfectly on my head. Like it came right down. I don't know if you noticed, but I also have big ears. And big head, big ears. And so cowboy hats don't look that great on me. But I believe that if I had a cowboy hat, that everything in my life would change. And this cowboy hat was on sale. It was so on sale that my mom was able to afford it. And so she bought me this jean cowboy hat. I wore that jean cowboy hat around the house. I was so proud. I was waiting to wear it to church. I figured that the moment I stepped into our church, that all of a sudden every head would turn. All conversation about the things of God would come to an end. Every eye would turn towards me and they would see my cowboy hat. And the older teens would go, respect. We give him respect. And I would be accepted by the teens of our church. I might even at the age of 13 be nominated for the board. Who knows? I mean, it was just going to be a good moment in my life. And I walked into the church waiting for the moment. And no one did anything. No one said anything. A couple people gave me a weird look. And everything I had dreamed about just fell to the ground. I went home and I looked in the mirror. And I thought to myself, I look ridiculous. I thought that if I had the hat like Steve, that I would be cool. And so I chased after it, and I wanted it so desperately. I'd lay in bed thinking about it, and I wore that hat with pride to church, but I put that hat on my head, and I look like a stupid individual. I never ever asked myself prior to this moment whether or not a hat would look good on my head. But I worked my mind and my emotions to chase after something that I thought would make me content. but it only left me disappointed. You're probably not chasing after cowboy hats, I don't think. But many times we chase after things in life, jobs, material goods, success, maybe even positions in the church, because we want to get something from it for ourselves. We are looking for something. We envy something that somebody else has. And because of our lack thereof inside, we pursue those things because we're envious that somebody is getting noticed, that somebody is being applauded. And we chase. We work hard. Look at Philippians chapter 4, verse 11 to 12. Words of Paul. He says, I'm not saying this because I am in need, for I've learned to be content with whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. But Paul's had roller coaster life. He's had moments where, abundance, where his kitchen's a buffet. He's had moments where he's had nothing, where he goes days without a piece of bread. He says, there are moments where I just have it all, and there are moments I have nothing, and I've just come to this place where I learned to be content. Content. This word content means an inward adequacy that comes from God. I don't know about you, but this is a struggle area for me sometimes. That I get my adequacy from Him. That I rest in a place where I'm content. That where God has put me, what God has given me, is enough for the moment. Can you say that? The place that God has you, the things He's given you, is enough for the moment. That you find adequacy in Him. In Him. When I first came to this church, I had one fear. Well, two fears. I had a fear that I didn't know that I was going to mess everything up. That was just one of my fears. I hope I haven't done that. My second fear, though, was that I might not get a chance to speak camps or conventions again. Because, friends, I love communicating. I love preaching. I feel like that's something God's put on my life. When I go and preach, I come back refreshed. I'm full of energy and spiritual renewal inside. And I thought when I left district office and came to this church that I would get to preach every Sunday, but I'd miss those mountaintop moments of preaching. And I remember in the first 2 years, I had this opportunity to speak a family camp. And I didn't have a clue that family camps were going to be so enjoyable. I guess it was that shift that God was doing in my life. I'd done youth camps. But I did a family camp in one of our districts. I don't know whether it was the one in Western Ontario or Maritimes, but I did this camp, and I was so excited. And I remember coming back, and I thought, man, I feel good about this. Like, people thought I spoke well. I need this in my life. I need this to feel fulfilled. I remember I've never ever promoted myself. I've never tried to market myself. But I have a friend who's an evangelist all through the States. He actually travels all over the world. Good friends. And I was so eager to do more speaking. Not all the time, just like once a summer, just a week of camp that would just make me feel good. I texted him, and I was like, man, I just did a family camp, and this is what God did. And I pretend I was spiritual. All these little lines of spiritual. But it was really me fishing for him to say, hey, I got some opportunities. And as we conversed through text, eventually he said, hey, you know what? I know you, Hillier. I'm going to recommend you to camps. I was like, oh, yeah. I'm going to be speaking at a camp each summer anywhere in North America. It's going to be amazing. Yeah, that didn't happen. And I'll tell you, over the next few years, since we've been here, God's opened the odd opportunity, and I really appreciate it. But this past January, I was doing a few days of pastors, doing the services for the pastors, the youth pastors and kids pastors of Western Ontario. There's about 100 people in the room, and it was probably the most enjoyable event that I had ever done. Speaking, I just was so fulfilled, and God moved in, and it was amazing. I went back to my room on the Tuesday afternoon and was just praying for the last session. And there was something inside of me that just drew my mind back to this church. And I said, God, I'm so thankful for the church I'm part of. And as much as I'm loving this opportunity, God, I love my church. I know you hear me say it, but I'm telling you about what's in my heart. In my heart, I was like, God, my favorite place to preach is CPC. And then I said this to him. I said, God, I am so content with being the pastor of CPC. And this is the first time I've ever prayed this. I said, God, if you don't want me to preach on the road ever again, if you don't want me to ever preach a retreat, if you don't want me to ever preach a camp, if you don't want me to ever preach in some place, I am completely okay with that. I give it back to you. I find my adequacy in where you've put me. I'm fulfilled. Friends, I've never prayed that prayer before. I'm just being honest. I mean, especially as a young pastor, when I was early in ministry, you're just kind of always chasing after those opportunities. But this moment was a moment of not chasing, but contentment. And that afternoon, I prayed and I said, God, please know you can shut every door for me to ever speak anywhere again. And I'm okay with that because I'm so thankful for where you've put me. I go into the service that night. The director from Brayside Camp in Western Ontario comes to me and he says, hey, Jeff, would you ever speak a family camp? I got to tell you, in my mind, I'm thinking, God, I just gave this back to you. And I hear him saying, I know, I'm giving it back to you. Then the next day, I get back to the office. And the superintendent from Manitoba calls me. He says, hey, I just want to know if you'd come and speak at our family camp this summer. 24 hours, two camps. I only said yes to one, by the way. And as I sat in my office, I said, God, I don't understand. And he says, I just want you to be content with where you're at. And friends, I think that sometimes God will not give you some of the blessings that you seek after, you chase after, until you can get to the place of being content with what he's given you. Until you come to this place of saying, God, it's absolutely adequate. I am fulfilled in you, in what you've given me, in the place I'm at. And God, and as soon as you get to that place truly where your heart is truly there, where nothing more needs to be given, that's when he starts to give you more things. But when we chase after things, he's like, you're not content. You haven't learned what Paul learned. You are envying somebody else's success. You're envying somebody else's opportunity. Listen to me for a second. Unless the Spirit of God is nudging you into another direction or towards something else to have, he has likely given you everything that you need for the moment. He has given you the job you need for the moment. He has given you the material goods you need for the moment. He has given you the successes that you need for the moment. He has given you the affirmation you need for the moment. It's about grabbing hold of it and saying, I'm content with what he's given me, and I don't need to chase after something else. And in the moment when you grab hold of contentment and you squash that head of envy, those are the moments that God trusts you to move you on with some other things. That's what takes place. And so we choose contentment after chasing. The last thing is we need to champion instead of criticizing. I wrote it down wrong in my paper. Champion instead of criticizing. You know the story of Cain and Abel. The two young brothers who are the first interactions we see post-Garden of Eden. They both offer sacrifices, and I'm not going to go into great depths, but it's not what they give God, it's the amount that they give God. The word that's there, Cain's given, or Abel's given the better sacrifice, is a quantitative word. And so what God's saying is that Abel's actually given everything to God. Like he trusts him. There's a faith element here. And Cain's just given the bare minimal, and so it's about that. And so God blesses Abel, and Cain's ticked off. Envy creeps up. And he's walking around sulking. My brother giving God that stupid sacrifice. We both gave him sacrifice. How come he gets blessed and I don't get blessed? How come he gets this and I don't get this? And God comes along and says, what's your problem? What's my problem? My brother's got a blessing. We both gave sacrifices. My brother's got the blessing. I want the blessing. And this envy is in his heart. And God goes, why are you being like this? You just got to do what's right and everything's going to be fine. You'll get your blessing. What does Cain do? Cain attacks his brother. He attacks him. I want to tell you this. Attacking is the ultimate sign of envy in your heart. There are two times that you will attack somebody else. You will attack somebody when you have pride, or you will attack somebody when you have envy. Those are the two times that I can think of. Maybe I'm missing something, but I thought about it at great lengths this week. You will attack somebody, maybe not physically, but with your words, when there's pride and when there is envy. You see, when there's pride, you will say, I feel I know better. Can I just have a little transparent moment with you for a second as the pastor? It's funny how many times people think that they know better than me as the pastor. They've never done the job. They've never had to pastor a congregation on the side, but they know better than what I know. It's a pride thing. Maybe you do, by the way, but I'm just saying that it's usually a pride. We say, I feel I know better. And you look at somebody else and you say, I know better. You don't know their circumstance. You don't know the circumstances around the situation, but you say, I feel I know better. Pride. So you start to cut them up. Second is envy. And envy, when there's envy, you say, I feel I deserve better. I feel I deserve better than Abel. And we start to cut up. God comes to Cain after he's attacked his brother. He says, hey, where's your brother? And the words that we hear are so significant because Cain says, am I my brother's keeper? His question is actually the answer that God wants him to be faced with. Because he is his brother's keeper. This thing called relationship involves us keeping the people around us. And this word keep means to watch over, to keep guard. It's the one who stands on the wall and watches that the enemy doesn't come in. It's the shepherd who watches that his sheep don't get torn apart. What Cain is asking God, am I my brother's keeper, is actually what God is trying to confront him with, that in the midst of his envy, he's not to be envying, he's not to be cutting, he's not to be criticizing, but he is to be championing his brother. He is to guard his brother and wish for the success of his brother. Let me tell you something. You don't truly love somebody unless you're willing to champion them. Unless you're willing to fight for them instead of against them. Unless you're willing to let them get more blessings than you. Well, it's nice and quiet in here. It's so nice. Look at this. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 4. It says, love is patient. Love is kind. Love does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. If you truly love the people around you, you won't envy. When they get a better promotion than you, you will champion them for that promotion. When somebody gets another material good that you haven't got, instead of cutting them up, you will champion them. But what we do is we begin to criticize people. We judge them for what they have. Oh, yeah, that person only got that promotion because of blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah, that person got that new car. But you know what? Their kids are a mess because they're working night and day. Oh, yeah, that person is getting all kinds of answers to prayer, but their head is so in the clouds. Oh, man. They don't even know how to relate to people. We start to cut people apart. We begin to judge their motivations because we actually want what they have. We feel that we deserve better. Am I my brother's keeper? And God is saying to Cain, yes, you are. When you truly love people, you will champion them when they get successes. When you truly love people, you will celebrate it when God blesses them. When you truly love people, you will allow people to get more than you, even if they don't deserve it. Because the truth is, nobody deserves what God gives us. You will champion other people. Let me ask you a question. How well are you championing the people around you? Pastor Nick clipped it on. He did a bad job. Anyways. Twice under the bus, right? It's good. How well are you celebrating people's successes? I know the envy monster that creeps in pastoring. I have some friends. I have a friend who's a couple years younger than me. He called me when he first started pastoring. And he wanted all kinds of tips, and so I gave him my wisdom. I had only been here for a couple years, but he had just started. I tried to give him my wisdom. His growth rate is bigger than ours. That doesn't always feel good. another pastor friend on the other side of the country. God's doing all kinds of things, and this envy greed, this envy monster sometimes creeps its head up. There's moments in the city when other pastors are seeing certain things and the envy monster creeps in. So I started doing something a few years ago. Every Easter weekend, you don't know this, but I'm back in my office before anybody gets to church. And I'm taking a few moments to pray for our pastor, PAOC pastors in the city. And there's a few I know by name, and I also pray for other churches. But I start to pray, God, I pray for Mark Scar today. I pray that he will see so many people get saved, that church will keep growing, Woodvale will keep growing, and that you will just blow things apart in his community. God, I pray for Peter McIntosh. God, let him see more. Let him see great growth at Bethel. I pray that, and I start praying blessing. I pray for Jonathan Hutchinson. I pray that you would just bless him and that he would see incredible harvest. I pray for Jason Boucher at Life Center. God, thank you for another church in this city of Orleans that we're trying to reach the kingdom. We're trying to build your kingdom together. God, I pray. And as I pray for their success, I then text them and let them know. Hey, guys, I just want you to know I'm praying for you. I'm just believing, I'm championing you. I'm believing that God will give you great harvest today. And in my heart, I'm praying that they will have more people get saved than even we do. Because when you begin to champion, all of a sudden, envy's, that monster of envy gets squished. What are you doing? What about you? Never mind about me. Let me champion somebody else. Because I am my brother's keeper. I'm here to see everybody else win. If I can help someone's arms be held up. If I can help somebody else have victory in the kingdom. If I can do something for somebody else, then I think Jesus will be pleased with me. You see, you squash this monster of envy when you begin to champion other people. And I'd encourage you to champion as many people as possible. Pastor Steve, just come back. Craig Rochelle tells this story. There was a girl in his congregation who was 6 years old. She was dying of I don't know if it was cancer or some disease, but she was dying. And so he went to the hospital just a short time before she passed away. Here's this little girl in desperate need of a touch from God who has so little. I mean, he comes from his nice home and nice church and life's going so well, but he walks in and he's broken inside. He's feeling pain for her. And he looks at her and he says, sweetheart, listen, what do you want? I will give you anything you want. I just want you to be happy. And she pauses and she begins to think, and Craig Rochelle begins to imagine in his mind what she's thinking about. Maybe she wants a bowl of ice cream, a new bike, a trip to a special location. I mean, she knows all her other friends are experiencing so many joys of life, and in these last few days, she's got to be envying what they have, that they're going to live longer, and they're going to experience more, and they'll face their problems, and they'll get married someday, and they'll have kids, and she'll never get to experience this, and she's got to have this envy inside of her. And he says, what do you want? I'll give you anything. And she pauses, and she thinks for a moment, and then she says these words. I got my two favorite sticker books, my favorite doll, my mom and dad, and Jesus. What more could a kid want? What more could a kid want? Friends, I think so many times we are chasing after the wrong things, and this monster of envy is sending us off in directions that are burning us out, that are causing tensions in our home, that are creating us to chase after things that Jesus never wanted us to chase after, that are putting things in our hearts against fellow brothers and sisters because we are looking at what they have and saying, I wish I had that. Just look at what you have. Just thank Jesus for what you have. And let the monster of envy be squished. Let its head be squashed by your foot. Say, I choose to celebrate what I have. I choose to be content. And I choose not to criticize or attack, but I choose to champion my brothers and sisters around me. And when you do, you'll hear the squeal and the scream of the green-head monster called envy. But he will die in your life, and you'll be a little bit more like Jesus. Would you stand with me? Would you bow your heads, close your eyes just for a moment? I'm going to invite our prayer team just to come to the front. If you have a need here this morning and you just need prayer, One of the things about this church is that we pray for people to be healed and have God step in, and the prayer team will be here at the end of the service when I conclude. and you're able to slip out and just come up and one of them will pray for you. But your head's bowed, your eyes closed. First thing I want to ask is this. You're in this place and you heard 10 testimonies today. Kids and some parents, some adults, gave their lives to Jesus and they testified what a difference Jesus makes in their life. And you hear me preach about being able to be content in any circumstance. It's only because of Jesus. Say, how do I have that relationship? Well, you really can't do anything, I'm sorry to say. You'll never attain that relationship on your own abilities. That's why Jesus had to come. He died on a cross, and then he rose 3 days later. What he's asking is for your full allegiance to him. Not just saying a prayer, not just having an affirmation moment, not just believing that he is who he says he is, but complete allegiance. That you would say, I choose this day to follow this man, this God man named Jesus. I choose to follow him. I want him to come into my life and be in charge because he can bring me the contentment I need. I can be in that relationship. Nobody's looking around, just you and me. You'd say, Pastor, today I choose to follow Jesus. I want to give him my life right now. If you're here and you've never done that, would you just raise your hand? Just wave it at me really quickly. Is there anybody in this place? Come on, God's speaking to some hearts today. I know you're nervous, but you know that he's speaking to you. Anybody in this place? Come on, just wave at me. Make sure it's really clear. All right. Maybe you didn't raise your hand or you raised it so quick I didn't see it. I'd really encourage you just to come to the front. One of the people at the front will pray with you in just a moment. They'll give you a package to help you with the next steps. But today is the day that Jesus wants to be in charge of your life. Absolutely change and bring contentment to you. Now, church, as we leave this place, we want to pray that the envy monster would die. That we would be more like Jesus and we would celebrate everything he's given us. We would find our adequacy in him being completely content. And we would champion other people instead of cutting them up. That envy would have no place in this place or in our hearts. And so Jesus, as we conclude this morning, I thank you. I thank you for what we learned from Scripture. And I pray today that you would kill the green-eyed monster of envy that gets into our hearts. I pray that jealousy and pride and envy would die today and that we would celebrate every blessing you've given us. I pray that, God, we would find our contentment in you. You have given us everything we need for this very moment. And let us celebrate that, I pray. And I pray that we would learn how to champion other people. We are our brother's keeper. We are our sister's keeper. And let us guard and keep watch so that nobody cuts them, so that nobody criticizes them, so that nobody throws them under the bus. I pray that we would champion one another and be a church of love. Let the green-eyed monster called envy leave our hearts, leave our souls, leave our lives, that Jesus Christ might be glorified. As we commit to follow you this week, would you use this congregation to further your kingdom, to let people know about the Jesus we serve? Bless each one now, we pray, in your name. Amen. Have a great week, everyone.